EMS on the Mountain is an entertainment, educational, and commentary product recorded by Sean and Mike and produced by them. Nothing recorded by Sean, Mike, or any of the guests of the show is endorsed nor authorized by their respective employers or agencies unless explicitly outlined. All commentary and statements made are their own. Always follow your respective medical protocols. Nothing said on this platform should be considered medical direction. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments.
That was, the disco would have been way better. There we go.
Good morning, Detroit, and welcome back to another episode of EMS on the Mountain.
Okay, I'm done playing with my toys.
You let some people have a little technology. Oh, yeah, see? Where has this been the last 3 years?
That's a good point. So, yeah, I might have gotten a new mixer that does stuff, and now I feel cool for having it.
Forever. All right. Welcome back to what is probably going to be the second episode, I believe.
Yes.
Of the new year. We've only done one other one, and I'm already losing count. It's not a good sign.
Yeah, man. That's old age, though. That happens. Yeah.
This episode, we're going to discuss integration with other local responders. I think a little bit on how to utilize, and I think a bit more on the adult interactions amongst leadership and how the different agencies need to come together and work together.
Is the technical term play nice?
Play nice would probably be, I think that's what it's referred to under ICS.
ICS actually calls it play nice?
I think so. ICS phase one, play nice.
So we're going to do some level 300 and 400 level shit now?
Yes, we are.
All right.
For those listeners who aren't familiar, which if you're in the U.S., I would find it shocking. But remember, ICS is the, what is it? Something? Communication.
Incident Command System.
Command System. There we go.
The ICS. They changed the name recently to
I have a whole degree in this shit, and I can't even keep it straight. But yes, the Incident Command System.
It's the national, it's NIMS, right? The National Incident Management System, and ICS is the Incident Communication, or the Incident Command
component
System.
Thereof of NIMS, yeah.
Yeah.
So most U.S. agencies, I think, most require most people to have your ICS, like 1, 2, 7, and 8.
100 being standard. Introduction, 2 is the single resource, 700 is the national system, like how the federal interoperability for big things is supposed to happen, and the 8th one is, I think it's the framework one, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the national framework for what happens when bad things occur.
Long story short, there is a whole system in place out there on how agencies are supposed to interact with each other when they arrive on scene, outlining who's supposed to be in charge, who's in charge of what resources and when, etc. We are not going to be giving you an ICS level 300, 400. Those are more the leadership level of managing incidents classes here. We're just going to talk about, I think, a little more common sense, ground truth approach to some of this, as outside of major incidents, these are all usually just ad hoc relationships based on one agency having some sort of incident, requesting aid or assistance from somebody else, and then those folks showing up. And the size of that response on both sides can vary dramatically depending on, on the day of the week you request certain resources. I know for Mike and I, If it's a weekend event, I mean, depending on what agency comes up for a little mutual aid assistance, man, you might get 2 or 3 fire apparatus, at least one more ambulance, a couple of supervising level, like captains or chiefs showing up. Or if it's a Tuesday, you might get one of those.
You might get Tim.
Yeah, you might
in his job shirt.
Yeah, in his job shirt and a pickup truck with lights on it.
Yeah.
So really, it varies, right? And then, of course, this will vary jurisdiction to jurisdiction where you're at across the country. I can't speak to anything for our friends listening overseas. I simply don't know enough about all your varied response systems. And let's be honest, it's really, I'm not going to do that. I'm probably most familiar with would probably be the English and the German models. And mm-hmm. they are, just because they're fairly similar that I'm aware of to U.S. level stuff.
I don't know. Well, let me ask the earnest question. Do they have volunteer contingents similar to the U.S. or is it mostly paid personnel?
In the U.S.?
No, in Germany.
Oh, no, I believe Germany is predominantly it. Pretty much everywhere else is largely paid services.
That's what I thought too. I just, when you said that, I was like, oh, do I not know? Am I dumb?
No. And for the most part,
the answer is yes, I'm dumb. But
yeah. Yeah, like I was going to say, Britain, for the most part, fire is completely separate from EMS, right? The fire service does fire, and that's what they do. Whereas in the U.S., like, fire and EMS are often embedded in the same agency.
Right? You ready? Like, I'm going to stir some pots now, as it should be.
You're not going to get an argument out of me. I agree. EMS should be a separate third service. But
yep,
that's a discussion we can have another day.
Who wants to talk about?
People want to talk about it. Just you'll get a bunch of fire chiefs all riled up. So
I'll stop
back
being
to this
snarky bastard now.
So we'll just, I guess we'll start off with a fictional scenario. Or actually we can base it on a couple of events that you and I have both participated.
Let's pull the EMS 2020 thing. The names in the scenario have been changed to protect the innocent.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll go with example A, which was a couple years ago for us now. There was reports of a lost, injured hiker, and we got a very early morning phone call from our supervisor at the time, who shall be known as Yoda, small but powerful. Yeah, see Mike's laughing. He knows. Yeah. So it was one of those.
So Yoda called and was like, hey, Yoda go somewhere, do stuff.
There's a dude down, I forget which local agency is already responding. You better beat them there.
Yeah, you better hurry up.
All right, got to find pants, right? Off we go. About the time we're arriving, some of their apparatus, actually they had one ambulance that had already been on scene or mm-hmm. showed up, and a crew had gone down trail already. So we jumped out. Yoda had arrived shortly as we're pulling in. Yoda arrives and he's like, why aren't you on the trail? Move your ass.
Yeah.
So I immediately grabbed my pack and I head down trail and left Mike to do a little coordination with this other arriving agency.
It's humanly possible to get the fuck on trail and get away from being part of coordinating things.
Yes, he was. Unfortunately, he was slower.
Yeah. Turns out I don't hike as fast.
Somebody already had their backpack on.
Yep.
And did not want to incur the wrath of Yoda. I headed down trail quickly. It's to keep this proceeding. One of the local responding agencies there, their officer, was like, had already pre-alerted a helicopter. Actually, they weren't even pre-alerted. They had actually had them, we're going to have them start flying.
They launched them. Yeah.
Yeah, and Mike was like, you need to stand that shit down now. Otherwise, they're just going to land and be waiting.
For description purposes, this isn't a helicopter with hoist capability. It's not a Blackhawk. Yeah. It's not a Bell.
HEMS.
It's a traditional HEMS, like, inter-facility service
yeah.
that has to set down in the road somewhere and then hot load or spin down and wait and get in the ambulance and do the transfer. This wasn't some wilderness resource. This was a traditional thing, and we were hours away from getting this person out of the woods.
Yes. Yeah. And so Mike started the, hey, man, you need to turn that shit off. They're going to be waiting. It's going to be a waste. We don't even know what we got yet.
They could do two or three IFTs in the time it's going to take us to do this. Let them go do
literally.
Other things. Yeah.
Right. Because we hadn't received a single patient report yet from this other crew
nothing.
That had already headed down trail. At which point, we'll call Yoda. our boss
mm-hmm.
basically told Mike, okay, good, you're here, get the hell out of here. And proceeded to then kindly let this other, I think he was a captain, know that he was not in charge while there. You know, that this is my jurisdiction. This is how this is going to go. Appreciate you being here, but this is my show. Don't go coordinating stuff until you talk to me.
And yes, my dance.
That one, from that point on, went okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I headed down trail. I was the first of Mike and I to get on scene to link up with this. I think it was three or four other providers who had come off that ambulance. I want to say it was probably three, to include two EMTs and one, the old I-99 EMT intermediate. Folks remember that, which was essentially almost on the cusp of being a paramedic, but lacking a few paramedic level.
But don't touch children.
Yeah, so pediatrics and some cardiac things was about the biggest difference. You can just keep it simple and say there's a paramedic and two EMTs already on scene. And they were barely on scene when I had first gotten there, right? They had not gotten a full set of vitals yet. They barely clipped on a pulse ox. No fault of them. It's just they weren't that far ahead of us.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
And so when we got on scene, I announced who I was and that this is now my patient. And they were very happy to defer that over. There was no issues on scene with that sort of interaction. With their medic was not trying to play my junk's bigger than your junk. This is my patient. I was here first kind of thing. They knew they were the visiting agency. They had no problem turning mm-hmm. over essentially primary care to me, which at that point, it's like there were two EMTs and that medic there. So it was like, cool, let's get this pad underneath this guy, get him covered up, trying to, because this was not the best of weather days. Then it was pretty cool in the evenings. A lot of rain had been coming, right? So it was like, let's get him out of the environment. Let's start warming this person up as best we can based on scene. And then I just sat back, got that first set of vitals, had that other medic work on some IV access, called our report back, like what we needed. Not long after that, Mike showed up. Not much happened until that point, just because there wasn't a lot to do for this guy yet.
I was pretty much useless, is basically what he's saying.
It's not that you were useless, it's just this guy needed a hospital. He needed, like, they're estimating he'd been out laying on this trail, essentially, in states of unresponsiveness for, what, almost 3 days at that point?
Yep.
So he needed legit resuscitation in an ICU. He didn't need pre-hospital EMS other than starting some IV fluids.
Right.
And getting him warm and transported. That was the big thing, right? On that particular scene, some follow-on resources arrived, led by some of our own fellow agency members, basically coming in with the Stokes basket. And we needed to do a little bit of rope work just to get this guy down off of. He'd fallen into some rocks between two levels of trail, one high, one low. So he was somewhere in between. So we need to do a little rope work. All this to say that the interaction on scene was very smooth and efficient.
Mm-hmm.
The responding supporting agency very much understood that they were there to help and there was no issues on scene. They were all very happy to do whatever was asked of them. Help move the patient, help carry the patient. They were like, cool, let's do this. Because mostly they recognized that while this was down a trail and up into the woods a little bit, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. For those that, if you're familiar with urban fire types, like they're not outfitted, dressed, and kitted for backwoods response. These guys are in zip-up, if they're zipped, fire boots, standard blue pants and t-shirts, right? They're not ready to go hiking down trail with backpacks and water and trail mix and stuff to sustain themselves, let alone a patient, right?
Right.
They went with a couple of aid bags and that was it because that's all they knew to bring because that's what they always bring, right? So
yep.
I would say on scene for that particular incident, zero issues. Everybody worked together, no problem. Got him back, got him put back in one of the other ambulances. Got him onto the helicopter because we did re-alert the helicopter and got flown out, I believe. And life was great from that perspective. Now, back at what we'll call the command area, where Yoda and the other responding fire captain were at, I know there was a little bit more friction, not a whole lot. And that comes from not quite having a very good formalized policy as to mutual aid response stuff.
Right.
Both people very much wanting to do the very best they could for the situation and the patient, but one person, and nothing against him, right? The fire captain, basically. I'm in charge of my guys. And so, okay, cool. Understandable. They're your guys. Mm-hmm. I'm on board, but they're now part of this larger response. I'm in charge of this larger response, essentially established as the incident commander.
Mm-hmm.
You are one of my sub-elements, if you want to call it a task force for the rescue. Fine, if you want to stick with some NIMS ICS stuff, which would be probably appropriate. Yeah, you're in charge of your guys, but my guys are on scene and they're in charge of the overall patient piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think he was a little disgruntled with that, which didn't play out at all on scene, like I mentioned before. Long story short, everything went well. There's a very quick debrief. Yeah, where he complained about that a little bit. Their guys were like, ah, things went really well. Like, they showed up. This is what we did. They shared supplies. We did what we could. Got the patient here. Life was great. Like, from the responder level, things
turns
were great.
Out he didn't die. Win.
Yeah. Hooray for us. So that one was not bad, right? Like, a little bit of friction early on, simply because I know there isn't as, well, at that time at least, a set established policy. If you respond here, this person, regardless of who it specifically is, just like under ICS, it's by billet position, right? If I'm the incident commander, there doesn't have to be a name associated. I'm the IC. That person's in charge. There wasn't really a formalized process to say, these people own this thing. It was just an understood, almost the old school, like handshake. Yeah, we got it. When we come to you, you're in charge. If you come to us, we're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a little bit of friction just because, and again, I won't say through any fault of their own necessarily on the fire side. It's they're very much used to being in charge when they're on scenes, because even if they go to other jurisdictions, there's already that a hierarchy of that paramilitary fire service thing, right? There'll be a chief there and who's in charge of the fire, and then you report with your guys to that, and then you get assigned from there.
Right.
But for whatever reason, when they come to support on the Woods side, it doesn't translate well for them because it's just some random ranger or other agent that's like, hey, I'm in charge of this piece. And essentially they're alone, right? There's no collection of SUVs and buggies, as you fire guys like to call them.
Buggies.
There's still buggies. I hate the buggies. Yeah. Not a single horse around, but we're still driving a buggy, huh?
Yeah.
Call it my Tahoe. Anyway. And so how do you work with that? The answer is you do what they did and you just do it. And then Mike has an experience that was almost the exact opposite of that, where there was a lot of friction and a lot less cooperation. Though things still got done, people just didn't know how to work with each other. And the two entities almost remained separate throughout the event. And that's what we don't want to see.
No. There's a lot of different experiences in the world, for sure. The kicker is, and we've talked about this before, I think. I don't know. It's been enough podcasts, I tend to forget stuff. But there's a theme. There's a theme from the last episode we did. There's a theme holistically here that, okay, let me take half a step back. I've only, in the period of time that I've been doing wilderness medicine, I've only experienced two reactions from people that I interface with outside of our organization. If I go to classes or I go to conferences, Sean and I attend a fair number of events across the country. We like to maintain our skill set. We like to stay
knowledgeable. The first reaction that I often get is, actually, I don't get that often, but the first reaction I get is, especially from flight guys, holy crap, no way in hell do I know anything about the woods, right?
Yeah.
And when I first started getting this reaction, when I would explain that I'm at this critical care symposium or whatever the case may be, but I really specialize in wilderness medicine and being in the woods with patients, and it's not uncommon for me to be with somebody for 12 plus hours, nursing care level shit, measuring urine output level shit, although that's an interfacility thing too. Not so much in the 911 world. We don't really catheterize and measure urine output.
We definitely don't.
But it is a paramedic skill, right? Your ability to ascertain what their urine output is and chart it. Like, it is a paramedic thing, just typically in the, I don't really like levels, but the higher level critical care sort of transport stuff. And the woods. And people will say, oh my God, I don't know shit about the woods. And this has become our theme. My response is always, it ain't different, dog. It's just medicine in the woods. There's no such thing as wilderness medicine. It's medicine in the woods. Or the other reaction I get, and this is probably the majority of time, holy shit, that's cool. I wish I could do something like that. How do I get involved?
Yeah.
And I'd say 70% of people say those words, and then I start to either explain, or they actually take the first step and they start playing in the woodland world and they go, holy crap, I don't want to like sleep on a rock tonight. This doesn't appeal to me. This is not cool. I didn't realize I was going to have to sit around all day and hope that somebody gets hurt and then have to spend 13 hours carrying heavy crap out of the woods. I don't want to do that. And they bail. But I bring that up not because people are right or wrong, but there's high turnover in these jobs, in these positions. I would argue probably even more so than most traditional public service roles. And as such, we constantly have new faces, right? And I don't know of a single wilderness agency that I've interacted with, and there's lots of folks I've never interacted with, but I don't know of a single agency I've interacted with that doesn't have mutual aid requirements to get the job done, right? Whether it's Forest Service out, I have friends that work on the West Coast and search and rescue teams that go in and assist law enforcement in extrication of patients is pretty common out West. It's never one agency that shows up and does the job. Even in a rural traditional fire rescue service, it's usually the same people showing up. Whereas in a true wilderness environment, there's three or four or five different agencies that we're not very good at interactive training and doing administrative things and collaborating on our education process and having a unified structure beforehand. And every time you got to negotiate these things, right?
Yeah.
Are we taking your Stokes or my Stokes? How do we integrate fire crews that came off an engine with wilderness personnel, with state EMS or emergency response, state Office of Emergency Management personnel, with federal land management agency folks and volunteers, flight crews, could be law enforcement coming on a helicopter. All of these agencies have their SOPs and their way of playing, so to speak. And I think the only way you really solve for some of these things is to devote the time to do the interoperability and the agency agreements beforehand and probably at some level write it down and train on it. And I don't know. I'm sure there are places in the country that are crushing it. If you work in one of those places, please reach out to us. Let us know how well it's going. But even the people that typically tell me it goes well, they've got it handled. Once you dig under the covers, you're like, oh, that sounds a little rough.
Yeah. And this is, again, my version or my experiences is, I know out West in certain parks, and again, we talk about the NPS a lot, the National Park Service, just because they're probably
the gold standard the largest, search and rescue, according to the federal agency.
They're the largest, we'll call it, employer of wilderness medicine, full-time type people that actually get paid to be proficient in these things and be proficient in technical rescue, etc. So out West, certain parks have very good standing relationships with their local jurisdictions, whether that's mutual aid fire and or EMS responses. And that's usually because there's only one or two agencies that they have to interact with. And they might have some volunteers. But where Mike and I are at, I think there are what? Five fire rescue organizations at least. Yeah,
there's four or five fire rescue organizations.
Right?
There's
and
us. There's
two to
half
three.
A dozen,
I'd say two. Yeah, say two to three, we'll call them local volunteer SAR teams.
Right.
One primary, and then two others that are in the periphery that are near enough to actually do a good response.
Along right. with volunteer agencies that volunteer to do this and rescue as a tertiary job if they show up, like
yes,
resource yes. management, education, right?
Right. And then, yeah, then you got Mike and I's agency who provides some primary direct support to some of these folks. And so if you have a large event, you could have what we'll call the primary, the whoever owns the land that particular response is going on. Whether that's a state or federal or it's either going to, could be a county jurisdictional.
Could
thing,
be.
But for this, we'll just focus on either like a state
most
or federal
of the time
agency.
It's state or federal land, right?
Right. And then one or two responding local fire rescue departments, a volunteer SAR team. Depending on the level of the thing, there could be other federal agencies involved. Like we've had plane crashes where there's now FAA folks involved.
Yep.
TSB, any number of other federal agencies showing up as part of an investigation, additional volunteer SAR resources coming in. If this is going to be a multi-day effort, other teams might be brought in for personnel, local Office of Emergency Management for SAR management, like to interact and help run the planning and the headquarters elements, right? Because some of these state or national park people, they don't have a robust emergency management office. They have like the one person that's also a collateral duty. So mm-hmm. they can't stand up their own standalone headquarters. So they require assistance from these outside resources. And you might have an easy half a dozen, eight different jurisdictional owning agencies showing up. And the ability to wrangle all the cats and bring them under a single unified command. Again, we're not going to make this an ICS class, but is challenging. And I think what makes it challenging in certain places is all of the mutual aid agreements are just verbal. Yeah, we'll come help you. You come help us kind of stuff. And even if they actually put together a formalized written plan, at least from my experience out here, Mid-Atlantic region, I've never seen anybody exercise the plan. Like once a year, host a large-scale exercise to bring everybody in and do a simulated search, recovery, aircraft, whatever scenario, right? And just train it one day and just train it. Bring everybody together so you can flesh out who's in charge of what and when and where and everything else. And I think that needs to occur. I know where we're at, I know Mike, I'm sure, sees the invites. Every mm-hmm. year, one of the large federal agencies that supervises stuff in our area hosts a very large-scale mass casualty incident involving mass transit, right? So some years it's airplanes, some years it's trains, some years it's buses. But they alternate, and they run this thing every year so that all the responding jurisdictions that might be invited to come up to this all have a chance to play. And from the highest levels down to just the EMT driver on the ambulance, right? Everybody gets a chance to, now obviously not everybody, but certain numbers of apparatus and providers are asked to come and provide support to this thing.
Yep.
And that happens. But for the land management agencies, very seldom does it happen. Because again, it's very hard for them to take out a day or two and do these very large events that require a lot of coordination to set up and run, but then to actually do them. And for where we're at, for a lot of these supporting agencies, the rural fire rescue guys, they don't have the bandwidth. If they take a couple of engines and a couple of transport units out of service to support this training operation, they That might put them at a status zero, kind of. We've got one volunteer truck available,
yep.
Right? Like, they really can't do it because then they're out of resources. So it becomes challenging to exercise these capabilities. So then I think it comes back on a lot of what we talked about in that last episode of, you have to be a leader and you have to be able to manage people and you have to know when you've got to step in and assert the dominance. Like our good friend Yoda would have. Listen, I get it. This is all these shiny red things. Those are yours. Everything you're standing on is mine. I own you, right? Mm-hmm. This is my show. This is how it's going to run. Here's what I need you to do.
Yeah, this is what's
generally
happening.
If that one person, I would say, does it, you can be curt, stern, a little aggressive. But if you do it essentially what I'll call professionally, generally people are like, all right, sounds good. Let's do this. Because mm-hmm. again, like you mentioned before, everybody wants to do the right thing. Everybody wants to help the patients, whatever it is. And everybody wants to be part of the solution. Nobody sets out to be like, I'm going to obstruct the federal government today and tries to ruin the plan, right?
Talked about in dark corners. Those guys were being assholes. But in general, I've never met anybody that's like, I'm going to make sure I'm going to crater this exercise today. I'm going to crater this endeavor.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Even Mike and I know on our urban EMS adventures, there's a couple of agencies that are known to have particular attitudes towards everybody that's not them.
Mm.
And it's like, we are the shite and all the rest of you can go suck it because none of you are as good as we are. And that's really, okay, that kind of permeates down a little bit into the everyday fire rescue guys, but not as bad as it is up at the upper levels because they know that people are like, hey, we need help. And people are like, so about that, we'll give you a truck. We'll send something up there for you. Because, mm-hmm. And like Mike said, in those dark corners, in those crowded tables around bars late at night at some of these conferences and such, people are like, yeah, hey, look, man, we'd love to come work with you guys, but you're dicks and we really don't want to. Like,
yeah, we don't like you that much.
Why you guys got to be the way you are? Like, what do you mean?
But you have to be careful about that because that can happen to you inadvertently, right? One bad interaction on scene and the opportunity to have the conversation about, hey, we should be doing some more training, some more collaborative training. I see this a lot. This is a general statement. I'm not taking a shot at any one agency. I've worked with a lot of agencies. But oftentimes, there's the invitor and the invitee. And the invitor is telling the invitee how they do stuff. And there's an expectation of adherence as opposed to there isn't a lot of collaborative, like we are. Here, let me describe it this way. Oftentimes in your specialty, whether it's medicine or tech rescue or swift water, whatever the case may be, different agencies in a region will have different SOPs. They're going to be similar, but they're not identical. We go to whiz bang conferences in this industry for the purpose of learning. Vendors always show up and they're like, oh, here's my latest whiz bang doodad for solving a problem. And then the esteemed colleagues of ours that have the most experience get on stage and talk at us about ways they've solved problems previously. And we go, oh, that's cool. And there's all this language around collaboration and working together. And then we go back to our home agencies and we try to set up a regional conversation and someone will invite other agencies to come play. And the first thing they do is say, this is how we do it. We want you to know how we do it, as opposed to asking the question, how the hell would you solve this problem? What techniques and tools do you have that I've never seen before? But that doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
I'm urging people to start with the, I'm going to invite you and I'm not going to tell you how I do stuff. I want to lay out problem spaces and generate conversation that says, I have this problem. How would you solve this problem? Do you have a better way than I know of?
So I was just going to bring this up, right? So my day job, when we're doing certain studies and analysis, you start out with one thing, and that is the problem statement.
Mm-hmm.
What is it we're trying to solve? Pre-hospital blood. All right. We want to get pre-hospital blood available to a certain percentage or available within a certain time frame within the region. It might not be like maybe this agency's already got it. This one's already got it, but these three don't. It's like, okay, how do we make this, solve this problem of getting this available across our region? and then let people start the discussion, right? If you don't come in and just say, hey, we run a bloat program, this is how we do it. So, cool. We can't do that because of XYZ.
Right.
So I think you have to come on with that problem statement of, hey, listen, when we have these large scale situations that occur here, our biggest problem is communication, because we operate on these federal level radio channels. You guys operate on these state ones. For whatever reasons, maybe the state guys can't have federal channels, right? Because they're encrypted, or agencies don't want to share, whatever it might be. Okay, so how do we communicate? Who's in charge of what? For most places, like where we're at, if it's a fire, like a strictly fire-related thing, fire guys are going to be in charge. It's fire, right? But if it's in the EMS and rescue...
wet stuff on hot stuff.
There it is, right? Maybe they have like academies that take months to teach that. There gets to be a conflicting thing, because several of those agencies might be involved in that particular realm. And then it's, yeah, but this is my house. This is what we're doing. And I think that where you're going to run into that is where that host agency, if they're too small to provide the bulk of the resource, then they're going to have to start defaulting to who is going to bring the big guns to bear, if you will. If I'm a smaller state park and I've got three state rangers that are supporting this, and we have to do this large extrication of something, I'm out of my resources. The next biggest resource to do this that's trained and equipped for it is a volunteer SAR team. Then it seems that they should now be in charge of this level of operation, assuming there's nobody left to provide some sort of leadership and oversight to the operation. Same with if you have fire rescue guys responding, etc. I think this gets back into, like we discussed before, that adulting level of stuff. Understanding on scene, off scene. Here's what we have. Here's what the limitations are. Here's where I need to let somebody else be in charge of something else. Like we were talking about on the previous episode, like you can't run patient care and the technical rescue extrication piece plus coordinate the helicopters and everything else, right? You need to be doing the one. And if you can turn that over to somebody else, even if they're not from your agency, but they know what they're doing and they're able to do it, you need to let them do it. And if they're going to do it differently than you would, that's fine. Is the mission being accomplished? If the answer is yes, let it ride. You can ask about it later. Hey, why'd we do it like that? In our experience, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. I might have tried it like this, but good to go. It worked out. All things were grand, right? Like,
right.
But if you keep trying to be like, no, we're not going to do it that way. It's like, okay, dude, then you're in charge. You can't be in charge. Okay, then. Shut the hell up and let me do this. I can move your patient from A to B. You just got to let me do it. It's like, all right, fine. Okay. And off we go. And I think that needs to happen. And I think a lot of that comes down to, and I will say for a lot of these jurisdictions that don't have good, solid, formalized plans, you need the leader on scene who's actually, and we'll say it, the leader, not just the senior guy who's in charge, right? Or the person who's been placed in charge. You need somebody that can actually like, hey, I'm Ranger Chip. I'm in charge of this thing here on where we're at. It's like, cool. I'm Fire Chief Bob. Here's what I'm bringing. Okay, Bob, here's what we need to do. Do you have things that can do this? Can you help support this? And those two guys, both of them, need to be able to adult together and collaborate and put together a response and understand, okay, I'm going to be the overall incident commander, and my Fire Chief Bob over here, he's going to coordinate and essentially run the EMS and rescue piece of this. And I'm going to have my people embedded, and we'll make sure that if we have certain safety requirements or things that need to be adhered to, we'll make sure that those are adhered to, or there might be some other random stuff that just pops up that has to happen that you can't do for whatever reason. I don't know. It is what it is. And then as long as everybody's good with that, it works. And I would say usually we'll call it at the operational ground level, the guys actually going out to do those work pieces, as long as somebody's been identified as I'm in charge and everybody's like, cool, that dude's in charge.
Right.
It generally all works out. It's then, hey, you 12, you're going to do all this EMS and rescue stuff. And if nobody's told who's in charge of that 12, that's when you get those issues. It's like, ideally, whoever's in charge of that, again, that we'll call it the task force or that group for that piece,
mm-hmm.
they should be identified, I would say, by whoever's managing that headquarters element. Just so everybody's like, okay, yeah, if the two guys in charge are saying that he's in charge, then cool, he's in charge. It's Ranger Jane here. She's in charge of this, and her deputy's going to be fire technician Johnson.
So, right.
Hooky dokey, right? Like, everybody's got their thing, and then everybody goes and does it. And then generally, those 12 people are going to have no issues unless there's some weird off the wall. Oh, hey, like, we're fire dudes. I don't even touch aluminum carabiners. Like, our agency only uses 3/4-inch hemp ropes and steel, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
some absurd requirement is... Okay, you'll carry the heavy stuff, right? Work it out. But I think the biggest piece with integrating and working with the local responders outside of your agency is just being the adult and being able to demonstrate leadership when necessary and learning when to defer some of that leadership. If you're always just trying to fight it, then that's when you're going to have the issues,
mm-hmm.
just from my observations.
Yes, I agree with that. I think the only way we solve this, though, is training, right? It's education.
I agree. It's 100%.
It's getting together and fist fighting over this. And I don't know, maybe we'll do a whole nother episode on how to run an effective multi-agency training, because I don't know of anywhere that actually gets it. I shouldn't say that. I should not say that I don't know of anywhere that doesn't do it well. But I've never met agency that put together a multi-agency interoperability training program that didn't suck at some level,
yeah.
right? Whether it's the administrative and we want to do this and those guys don't want to play ball, or whether it's how do we structure this thing so that everybody gets something out of it, or how do we schedule this with multiple agencies at the same time? Now I'm starting to think, man, I should just pick up the torch on that and facilitate that in the region. Yeah. I don't think I will. I thought I'd say that. I don't know. I think we've about covered it. I think for wilderness-specific things, we think we're really good at ICS-level things, and we're not.
I think
this could be a whole other podcast, but it has been my experience. And I'm old enough now that I can officially say I predate ICS being a standard thing in public service, right?
Like, mm-hmm.
It wasn't, 2004, 2005, that time frame where the federal government released the FEMA ICS standard and all of that good stuff, NIMS.
Yeah, no, it was a post-9/11.
Yeah, it was post-9/11.
Everybody's getting on this thing.
But I think we can do better. And for ICS to work, you have to work at ICS. When I used to teach ICS, I used to say that, right? For ICS to work, you have to work at ICS. You can't just, I don't remember that. Neither one of us had gray hair when I used to teach that class.
Yeah.
You have to try hard, right? You have to follow the chain. You have to adhere to the rules. And it's hard to do. So perhaps, I don't know, I'll think about this. I may never do this podcast, but perhaps there needs to be a way to do it better. But if anybody out there has good interagency stuff, I'd love to hear about it. Come talk to us about it. I'm sure somebody's doing it well. They're probably in California. It's probably Cal Fire that is crushing it. But, those guys are like the gold standard in most of the stuff.
That's
anyway,
because this is our show. Come and play or fuck off.
Yeah, pretty much. But it is very important that you do this in admin time. And I'm going to advocate that anyone that's putting together multi-agency training, that you take the approach of starting with how would you solve a problem as opposed to this is how we do stuff. Tell me why I'm different. But I think that's the human nature in all these things is to say, we do it this way. I can tell you, I've participated in debriefs. I won't go into the details, but I've had members of my agency say that other people sucked at something. And my response was, none of you have worked for the fire service. How can you say they're doing it wrong?
Yeah.
When the fire, like I'm the only person standing here that has spent time in the fire, like formal fire service, as opposed to some sort of wilderness agency.
how can you say they did it wrong when their knowledge and their expectations for their personnel and how they operate fell directly in line with what they were doing? But because it's different than how you would have approached the problem, they're suddenly wrong. Why aren't we wrong for inviting people that do things differently into the game, right? Come play with me, and then telling them they're doing it wrong. How about we need to be a little more flexible? And that's just an example. But I think in general, interagency interoperability and training is still not, it's not awesome.
No. And and I think it is because it is so difficult, especially to get two or three state or federal agencies plus volunteers plus whatever else you want to bring out to play, all coordinated and showing up is difficult.
Yeah.
And it is, it's not an easy nut to crack. And I would say, and it's sure you could exercise agency A and B today, A and C the next time, A and D, then B and C. But those don't really fix the overall when everybody has to come together.
Right.
Like us, our agency, and anybody we support. Great. No issues. It's two of us. What do you need us to do? Here's what we're bringing. Okay, great. It's simple. It's easy. Mm-hmm. But when it's, hey, here's what we're bringing. Hey, we're bringing similar but different. And so are we. And then we have this and we have this and then we're in charge. Okay, cool. What do you want us to do? I don't know. What do you need to do? Dude, you're in charge, right?
Yep.
Bringing everybody. I think it's when you get it all together that's difficult. And again, for most places, those events are the one-offs, right? These aren't things that happen monthly.
No, these but just like we talk about procedures in medicine, the high risk, low, or the high acuity, low volume, right? The high risk, low volume. How often do we... In street EMS, like I was going to say innovation, but how often do we really truly pack gunshot wounds in a patient, right? How often are we slinging blood? Even as an agency, even in a busy agency, they might get blood like two or three times a month.
Yeah.
But that's not even high acuity. It's basically like hanging fluid and then it's red fluid. But finger thoracostomies, right? Dudes that ate a fucking tree on a motorcycle. Like those are low acuity, high risk events that we don't do very often. Interagency interoperability training, you only bring multiple agencies together when the shit's hit the fan, because the whole concept of mutual aid only occurs when you've been extended beyond your capability to solve a problem, right?
Exactly.
But we spend so little time training for the high acuity event as opposed to spending more time training for a thing that happens infrequently but is harder to manage. Maybe we need to flip that paradigm.
Yeah. Yeah, at a certain level,
Maybe we should.
Again. I think we should, but yeah, just the challenges.
All right, we've been rambling for 48 minutes. Is there anything else? We should probably just stop talking, huh?
It's always best.
All right. Here's to interagency interoperability.
Note then.
Yeah.
Okay, nerd.
If you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode, thanks for joining us. And until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.